Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Coach Raymond. He's back once again. Now, if you guys listened to his previous episode when he was talking about being a DOC with Rayos, now he's back with his private side of his business. Now, Coach Raymond, I actually love talking to him. He just lays it all out and makes it clear how he feels and shares his opinion. And this time, he's back to talk about Dynasty, which is his private and analytical coaching side business that he has. Now, if you ever seen any of these online, you'll know that a lot of these analytics will go through a player's videos, and he talks about what he does, and it's very time-consuming. If you ever seen one or listened to one, it takes a lot of time to break down a game, and his private lesson sessions seem awesome. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Coach Raymond Martinez, I'm currently offering private lessons, video analysis, technical training, with Dynasty Football Training, or DFT for short. I got about 15 years of experience coaching competitive, 2023 Competitive Coach of the Year for North Texas. And I'm now trying to kind of expand my coaching away from the club scene and trying to get into the more private, small group, training sessions, only because I saw there was a need for it, because I see a lot of technical issues with players at a competitive level that could have easily been taught as far as fundamentals on technique at a younger age, but they weren't covered, they were skipped. So I feel like there's a need out there for technical training, skills training, to try to get these players a great foundation before they can move on to competitive play. So that's kind of why I've started to go into that side. Part of it has been demand, you know, people asking me to train their kids. That's kind of what's pushed me over to start the private side. I started my own, you know, business for DFT because of that. So trying to take some extra time with these individual players, both male and female, from different ages, to try to provide a good foundation for them so that they can contribute more on their private teams. The video analysis thing is for those that are more remote. Seems to work well for that. Or those individuals that maybe know about me as a coach, but are remote. So I have a couple clients in Mineral Wells, Waxahachie, Dallas, that will send me film maybe once every 6 months, and I can analyze the film for them and give them feedback that they can provide to their coaches, or that they can take and try to change what they're doing during matches, to try to give themselves either technical or tactical advantage. I do that for high school players, which is kind of what I've been doing here recently. Some of them are my clients already, that I train. I started analyzing their game film and kind of just giving them my feedback so that they can try to be more productive at the high school level, because the coaching at the high school level is not always the best. So trying to provide them feedback that maybe they're not getting from their high school coaches and how they can improve and contribute more to those teams. And that's kind of why I started it. Obviously, the area that I'm in, which is Fort Worth, Texas, is still a little bit behind Dallas, I would say, as far as football and trying to have good platforms and good clubs here that we can build off of, and that can provide training and foundation that these players that are really interested in the competitive play side that they need. So there's a couple of clubs here, that could offer similar services. I am aware that there's also a couple of different coaches that do the same thing, which I think is great, but Fort Worth's big and it's growing, so I want to make sure that I have some kind of service offering for those that are interested in working with me. Yeah, that's kind of why I started it, and we're still obviously in the I'm still in the early phases of it. My Instagram page, DFT or Dynasty Football Training, is still the only way that the only thing I'm pushing out there at the moment. But more to come, more to come for sure.
Awesome. You actually answered some of my questions before. So we'll start off with the private lessons because I feel like every kid, in my opinion, there's not many kids that are so self-motivated. I know my son would rather play with someone else than and work with someone else than sitting down and doing it by himself. And if there's someone there to go work with, if it's me or a friend, he's more likely to go out there and play soccer. It's not so much he doesn't have the drive. I'm learning it is he doesn't want to do it alone. He wants the companion, the friendship, or someone helping him. As a parent that is a person that has private coaching for my son, I see the importance of it. I see the importance of a player not having it versus a player having it. I see the difference when my son goes to his private coach and when he doesn't. It's been about 6 months just because scheduling for us. And who we go see is he's in Plano. And it does make a difference because you have the time, if it's an hour or 90 minutes with your the player, you have the time to sit down and help them move through the phases. So what is the earliest you start off? Like, what's the earliest age you will take a player?
The earliest that I'll typically start working with the player is 6 years old. So six has been my youngest client that I've had thus far. And that has been interesting. I don't have as much experience with kids, 6 to 8 years old. But thankfully, when you're working with them privately and it's just one or two, it's not difficult to keep their attention. The whole goal is more to try to make the training session fun and to try to maximize the amount of touches they can get and really work on dynamic movements, try to build their coordination up, their balance physically, and then give them some time with the ball. But like I said, at that age, it's really more about fun. The feedback that I've gotten back from the parents has been really motivating for myself because it's difficult to measure the progression without seeing them play. But apparently, getting feedback from the parents, the progression is there. The players being more productive during matches, whether it's with his dribbling or his first touch or his communication on the field, there's progression. And that's great because that's what you want to hear as a coach. Whether you're a club coach or a private coach, you want to hear that there's progression in the player, that they're learning and they're improving. So if that's the case, it kind of encourages you to keep doing what you're doing. So yes, it's like I said, 6 to 8 years old is are some of the younger clients that I have. And there are, like I said, at that age, it's more about fun, making sure they're having fun and enjoying the training session. The more, strict, I guess, robust training sessions will come later in life. But when they're little, just trying to keep it fun and making sure that they're enjoying the training session is what's key.
So at that age, my son was about five. I think he was about 5 or 6 when he got his first private coach. And it was because he went from rec to club, and club is more physical. And he didn't know how to use his body. And he goes, every time someone shoved him, he would come home saying those players cheated. And it took us about 2 months to find a private coach for him. And we had the same coach for 3 years for him, 4 years for him. And eventually we parted ways last year, but I guess it was 4 years. But it was just to teach him how to use his body correctly. And that's all we hired him for. And we ended up staying there for 4 years because his first touch got better. His passing got better. His soccer IQ was constantly growing because he was explaining the game to my son. And I'm an advocate for him if he can afford him. So as you progress, let me go back a little bit before we progress. Everyone needs it for a different Every player needs a private coach for a different reason. And I think that's the thing parents don't understand. It is, oh, my kid has a private coach. Well, is it a private coach just to get him a private coach, or is it to make him better in an area that he's struggling in? Because once you've, I don't want to say, once the player learns to readjust and play the game how they should, other areas pop up that you'll see, like, oh my goodness, now he's struggling in this area or she's struggling in this area. And how do you correct this? And that's when you can go to your private coach saying, like, here's him in his game. How do we improve this in our player so they can be more successful versus they just go to private lessons and there's no open communication between the parent and the coach. And I think that is an area that needs to be more talked about. And how do you address that with the parents then?
Yeah, so for sure, I would say that there has to be. Number one is you can't really have a team training session, even if you have a small group training. Even if you do small group training, which I also do small group training, it's not the same as, your club training session. Typically, clubs kind of have a book that they follow, and they're trying to create progression that way, development that way by following the book. But the private training sessions or private trainer, whether it's small group or individual, should be tailored to try to improve the player's weaknesses, if that makes sense. Every
Yes.
player has strength and weaknesses. Whether that's his physicality, like you kind of touched on earlier, his aggressiveness, his technical ability, maybe he's a striker and needs to learn how to properly strike the ball and finish. Maybe he's a winger and needs some individual training to improve his IQ. Maybe he's a center back and needs to really improve his aerial game and winning his aerial challenges. Every individual player should have different have a different plan in place. Small group training is a little different, especially if you have individuals or small groups that you're going to be working with long term. When you have small groups, you can assess the group as a whole and really try to touch on all those facets in individual training sessions. So if they're weak in every aspect, well, then you just start touching the aspects, right? You just start touching the physicality. You start touching on aggressiveness. You start touching on the technical aspect of the game. So you're improving the group as a whole, especially if they're all really close in age. So it's you gotta have a it, for sure it's different. You're not ob you're obviously not co covering tactics and structure, because it doesn't make any sense. You don't have the entire team, so what's the point in covering tactics and structure, right?
Right.
There's no point in covering that stuff, but you can touch on the individual elements that the player needs to play at a high level. Some of them I've had clients that reach out to me and it's more of a prep. They're using it as a prep phase to prepare them to try out for that ECNL team. So the player's prepping to try out for the ECNL. The player is prepping. I had a lot of players that were prepping for high school to try to make varsity. Part of that is conditioning, right? Trying to get prepared as far as conditioning. Yeah, so some of my clients reach out to me as a prep, right? They're trying to prepare. I may only work with that player for, 3 or 4 weeks prior to their quote unquote tryout. So trying to get them physically, mentally prepared. I'd say aggressiveness really plays a big factor in that, in their mental preparation side. But they need to be in shape. So a lot of dynamic exercises to try to get them physically prepared for those tryouts or those preseason games, preseason workouts, to try to see if they can impress the coach enough to make it to varsity or to make it to that ECNL team. So yeah, people come, I think, to the private trainers for different reasons. Obviously, another big reason is that what they're doing overseas in Europe is way different than how we do things here. Here, clubs will train 2 to 3 times a week, and in Europe, these kids are training, some of them as much as 20 hours a week. They're 2 training sessions a day. And then they have a classroom portion as well during the day, where they're covering tactics and going over specific scenarios to try to improve IQ. We're not doing that here, here in this country. So clients will come to try to get that extra hour and a half of training that the player may desire and want. So that it takes his week from 3 training sessions a week to 4 training sessions a week. Every extra hour that that player gets in training will give him an advantage in the long run. If he can stay with it and be committed to and be disciplined with this program, as he ages up, he'll have an advantage, that extra little bit of energy, mental toughness, physicality, technical ability will show in that championship match when they're on game 5 or 6, and they're in the 60th minute and everybody else is kind of fatigued out. That player will be able to make the difference and impact the match. Ideally, in a positive way, because his parents and himself have committed themselves to that extra hour of training, which gives that kid the advantage over everyone else. So yeah, different reasons that people go to private trainers. I think that it's necessary, and it's important to have another, even if it's just to have a separate voice, a different coach to assess the player. By all means, I think it's something positive can come from it. Absolutely.
I always tell everyone who I talk to as a parent, the more vo healthy voices and healthy touches our players get as they move through their career, doesn't matter if they go on to college or pro or if they stop playing soccer and just go through life, it means they can are willing to accept opinions from other people more easily as they grow up. I don't have any data on this, but I'm assuming people that are more willing to take words of advice from different points and different viewpoints are more likely to be successful in life beyond the game,
Absolutely.
not just the
Absolutely.
practice. So, like you said, having that extra voice does help. It allows a chance for a player to really grow and mature as they go through this. Now, as a parent, do you give an assessment to the parents when they first come in? And then when they
Yes,
leave, or how do you
absolutely.
show progression of players? I mean, 6 years olds to 18-year-olds or even college players all have to have an assessment done just so they can
Sure.
people can see what is really going on, and it helps parents
Absolutely.
figure out the next step.
Yeah, so absolutely. So there is an initial assessment for sure. I typically give that assessment verbally, and I also send it through text or through the application that I use to kind of keep track of all my private training.
Your microphone stopped. There we
Absolutely.
go. The last thing I heard was through the app you send an assessment.
So I do send an initial assessment to try to kind of identify the player's weak points and identify where I think I can improve the player immediately. So I do give that parent, an idea and a scope of this is the way we're going to do things for the next 3 weeks. And then you guys give me feedback on what you're seeing. If they're active in season at the moment, obviously players are off season. The majority of who I work with are U14 and older, so a lot of them are kind of in the off season right now. But if they're in season, they can give me immediate feedback. So yeah, there's the initial assessment. Typically after that, I get player, I ask for parent feedback. So is there an actual difference in what they're seeing during the match? So at that point, I'm looking for feedback from the parent. Should there be kind of an exit assessment? Well, I guess if I eventually stop working with the player, that can be something that can be offered. But typically, I'm looking for parent feedback and player feedback. So if the players are coming to me and saying, "Hey, coach, I'm kind of weak in this area, or I didn't do well in this area," well, cool. Let's build a training session around it, and let's try to improve your confidence in that, and try to make you more comfortable with that scenario. But yeah, so looking. Player and parent feedback, I think, are key to the process and making sure that the player is still progressing. So yeah, for sure. That's kind of where I'm at right now on that process, I guess.
You say you like to hear the feedback. How do I describe this? When I coached every fall and spring, we did an assessment of players that was based on what's the word I'm looking for? Certain things we were looking for, I guess, was the best way of putting it. And so we did it in the spring and in the in January. Like we did it like June, July. I shouldn't call it the spring, the summer. And then in the winter, every time re-signups start. So if we had any new kids come in, we could have an assessment. And I always found it interesting that kids that struggled with it the most in one time of the year, normally when school was out, normally struggled more than when school was in. I mean, you're talking 5 and 6 year olds at this time. I mean, you're not talking older kids. And I coached Landon at a young age. But when school was in, they all did really well. Do you see as players that you coach do better at certain times of the year, or they progress differently so far for you? Or is it, as I call it, the squiggly line of growth
No.
that looks like a tornado in an
Yeah.
upward manner of growth?
Yes. Absolutely. So I would say it's still the squiggly line, right? There is no perfect way to create or influence progression in a player. Typically, you're going to see the most progression when the player initially starts to work with you. So for that first, 30 to say 30 to 60 days is when you're going to see a change in the player. They're changing. Part of it is they're starting to understand why the technical skills and all that stuff are so important. But they're also being heavily influenced by the person that's coaching them. So if the person that's coaching them is asking for something totally different from the player, then their club coach or their school coach is asking of them, then you're probably going to see immediate results, right? 30, 60 days, you're going to see immediate progression in the player. And then after that, it can really level off. It can plateau and kind of sit for a while. And then you can see kind of, then it'll be that zigzag line of, the player may progress a lot, and then he may lose motivation for a little while, and then he'll jump back up and find his motivation again. And then, it's kind of a squiggly line after that. But I think within that 30 to 60 days, you should see some kind of progression in the player. That's kind of what I've seen as far as, the trend of what I've seen, and the feedback that I've gotten. Obviously, with time and stuff, the progression will kind of slow down. And then after that, it's more fine details. And, when we think of the fine details and stuff, you think of things that are like, to me mentally as a coach, it's stuff that's very low visibility as far as things that you can see. And as a parent that may not be a, ex-footballer, ex-professional footballer, you may not be able to see those things. But as a coach, if you keep working and really pushing the details onto the player, that they're doing the simple things really well, what you're going to notice is, like I said, at a high level game, that game that may be for the district championship or maybe a tournament winning match, when they can perform those details under high levels of stress and pressure, is when it can really positively impact the game the most. Now, it may not be visible to the naked eye, but for those that know what they're looking at, it can be really beneficial to the team and the team impact that that player is influencing. So, that's why I think progression is very difficult to measure as well. But yeah, for sure. Player motivation also has a lot to do with player progression, right? Does the kid care about what he's doing? Is he interested in getting better? All those things play a big factor. Does the coach have influence on that stuff? Yes, he does, but that influence can be limited. The kid's gonna do what he wants to do, especially when he's away from the coach. So, but yeah, those things are important too. So you have to assess those things as well.
And now, as you progress through the stages, I mean, as I can only use my kid just because that's the only example
Sure,
I
sure.
have. As you progress through this and you get to the older age groups, how do you, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. You get kids from at all stages of their soccer growth.
Sure.
And I
Yep.
feel like I love watching my son. I love watching my daughter. Like they both have strong passes. They both have strong kicks for their ages. But as my son has progressed and seeing the higher expectations of his coach when he had his private, when he was using his private coach all the time, that coach was even higher expectations at the time than his coach. Do you think you set higher expectations for the players you work with than the coaches they may have just because you're able to work one-on-one and really drill into them on the importance of when you're passing the ball? Like you use the inside of your foot, but use more of your, the more of your, the heel than the front of your foot. Or if you're trying to do this
Sure.
type of pass, like you can really dive into that because you have that expectation. I think,
Yeah.
Soccer Dave had the best analogy. It is going against the wall and seeing how hard you kick the ball and the way you kick the ball and seeing at every single different part angle on that ball, how you kick it dictates and how you're going to pass that ball and learning that. Do you when you with the older kids, do you dive into that more or do you let them try to self-explore that or do you try to have them try to find that answer on their own somehow?
Yes. A lot of that stuff is, I'd say it's very difficult to do that because for me, I have no idea what their club coach is doing and I have no idea what their school coach is doing. So it's very difficult to measure if my expectations are higher for them than their club coach or their school coach. I think that's a very difficult thing to assess. What I can say is that what I'm teaching, every training session has a different focus. So I want to make sure that they understand the focus for that training session. And then everything else is kind of after the fact. So as long as the kid can come away from that training session and he feels like he learned something, maybe he can't perform. Maybe in that training session, we're asking for a different, specific skill or a specific technique or a specific movement. And maybe at the end of the training session, the player can't perform that specific skill or movement or technique proficiently. But if he understands why it's important to know it and why it's important to do it correctly, then to me, the training session is a success. Will we have to touch again on that specific skill? Yes, absolutely. We'll continue to touch on it in his follow-up training sessions. But it's difficult to say that, my expectations are higher for than in, coach or parent or high school coach or middle school coach or whatever it is, club coach. It's difficult for me to say that. For all I know, as a private coach, when that kid jumps in the car, he may get totally rang out by his parent on, oh, you couldn't do it right, you couldn't perform the skill that coach was asking you. For all I know, that might be the case. And that's unfortunate because that shouldn't be the case, but it can be. So, technically, it's not the player's fault that they haven't learned the skill or haven't mastered it yet. But at least if they understand the why, you're increasing the player's IQ, and then you can try to touch on that specific skill or like I said, technique or whatever it is. You could try to touch on it until he's proficient with it and truly understands why it's important. And ultimately, you're building confidence in the player, little steps at a time, using that mindset. But to say that, I have higher expectations for that player is difficult. Do they need to do it the way I'm saying? Absolutely. But I think once, if you're good about explaining the why, then you're typically not going to get any pushback on why they have to do it that specific way. I'll give you kind of an example of that, and maybe we're jumping off topic, but I want to give an example of that. When I have players start that I start working with that are new, and I'm warming them up in their warm up, sometimes I use the Spanish type of warm up where they're basically dribbling in a small area, a small box, and I'm asking them, to do simple just dribbling techniques, right? Short touches. So when I get new players into the group, they're really hungry and they kind of want to show off. And I'll say, okay, everybody kind of dribble in the group. We're going to dribble and just move freely and make sure you don't run into anybody. In a small group session, four or five players. So I ask for very simple things. So I'll have players that start doing, Ronaldo chops and they're doing double step overs and they're doing Cruyff turns. And I'll take that player to the side and I'll say, hey, why are you doing that? I didn't ask you to do that. I just asked you to dribble within the box and don't run into anybody for 2, 3 minutes. Like, I don't need any of that yet. Just do the simple things really well first, and then we'll get into the more complex stuff. So I think sometimes the players can, even overperform. But understanding why the doing the simple things well is so important is really what I'm trying to get off in that training session. I'm really trying to push that, right? Can we do the simple things really well? Can you be a master of the simple things first? And then we can move on to the advanced things. If you can do 10 different skill moves, but you can't pass a ball flat on the ground, we have a problem. So really understanding why it's important for me to be able to play that pass flat, firm, on the ground to my teammates' feet is critical. So many players that I get cannot do that. They can't pass a ball well. So I think that's another big reason that I started, doing private training is because of that very reason. So many players that I see are of high quality, have all the athletic ability in the world, but geez, you ask them to pass the ball straight and they can't do it.
That is
So
one thing.
that is a fundamental problem of coaching, right? If somebody didn't tell that player or stop in their progression of coaching to say, hey, I need you to pass the ball straight. Like, you may be the most athletic, the fastest, the biggest, the tallest, the strongest, the most, techie as far as skill moves, but you can't pass the ball straight, son. So if you have the ball at your feet, it's fantastic. But when it comes time for you to let the ball go, we turn the ball over because you missed the pass. So that is a fundamental problem in coaching, right? And unfortunately, these players are being rewarded and told, that they're the next best thing since sliced bread because they do some of these things really well. They're gifted, they're blessed, right? But they cannot pass the ball straight or they miss the pass. So that's really disappointing to me as a coach because nobody put the emphasis or took the time to tell this player that he had to do this thing correct because they have to win matches and win championships as a team. It doesn't matter how good that individual is. Championships are won as a team, as a unit. And unless somebody takes the time to stop this player and say, hey, you need to do this right. And we got to do it now because in 5 years, it's going to be very important to the next coach that gets, that whether it's your college coach or whatever, that's going to be very important to him. So we got to try to put some emphasis on it now. I feel like a lot of that stuff gets skipped over. And that's a big reason on why I started the private training company.
I think that goes back to what I was getting at. I don't think you may not know what the expectations of the coach is, but your expectation is high enough because you're able to work on that one-on-one level. I think this is where parents get confused, especially once you hit U13, U14 age groups, that practices are tactical, team tacticals. It's not always working on
End of it, right?
your individual. You
Yes.
may have here and there an individual session or where you work on individual skill sets, but as you get older, those session part of your training sessions go that they're not yours, but their training session, your player, the player's training sessions go away, and it falls back onto the families. Where I also look at my son's current schedule, they practice 3 days a week, and they do work on one day of those 3 days as a more looking at passing and making them think more on how to manipulate the ball than how to play tactically as a team. But it all goes back at the end, like they tie it in at the very end, what they worked on those individual skill levels and what they want to see them doing in their scrimmaging. And this is where I feel like that separates different types of levels of coaching. And as a parent, it's like that's what I look at. And now, how is that being applied to my player, my son in this case, when he goes to his private lessons? I mean, I can't tell you how many private sessions I sat there, and all they do for a good 30 minutes is just passing drills. Passing, passing, passing for 30 minutes straight. They don't stop. They no water break. I mean, in the summer, he gave them a little bit more water breaks, but as soon as it got below 100 degrees, he was adamant about going about 30 minutes straight without any water breaks because he goes, when you play in a game, you don't get water breaks, bud. Like you have,
Absolutely.
and
Absolutely.
he was very adamant because, and I think parents need to take a step back and look at, like you said, like these kids that play at a very high level, they're getting praised, can't even pass the ball. And this is where, and I think this is these kids today, it's like you watch them all pass, they all have an arc. No one can pass the ball straight.
Straight
And I
and
went
flat.
right, flat, like a BB shot across the field. They all have this beautiful little arch that ends up behind the player. And in the air, and it's comical as a parent because I know my kid does it, but it's like time and place, time and place. And when you work with older kids, are you able to help them when you have their video assessment? Like if you sat down and gave them a video assessment and you work with them privately, are you able to say, listen, go back to your video at this minute. Why are you arching the ball on your pass?
Yes,
Like,
absolutely. Absolutely. So I think I'm a my and I'm speaking for myself, right? Myself specifically as a coach, I value players that can do the simple things right so much, so much. Now, the player may not be the best at other things. He may not be Messi that can take two guys and, take a shot on goal. But if he can pass, bring the ball down, control the ball, bring the ball down with both feet, and pass the ball well, that player is so valuable. He may not move, but, 5 to 6 feet. But good passers are so hard to find nowadays. But it's the fundamentals to having good midfielders. If you don't have good passers, like, it's going to be difficult to have good midfielders. Jumping back to your question, when you assess the video, when I assess video, absolutely. So that's for sure a question I ask. Like, why did you lift the ball when you made this pass? Were you under pressure? If you were under pressure, okay, I get it. But if you're totally unpressured and the pass is uncontested and you're standing there and your head's up and you're looking at the individual you're about to pass the ball to and you lift it up, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't resonate with me. So why did you play that ball in the air? You set your teammate up for failure. He's going to have to take two or three touches to bring that ball down now, which takes time. And we all know that time equals space. So his space is closing as he's taking time to bring that ball down. If you would have played him a good pass, he could have made a good first touch and got into the box. But because you made a poor pass, he had to stop the ball, bring it down, settle the ball, and now it's too late. Now he's marked. So the whole passing thing is crucial for me. But yeah, I mean, it's so what I've noticed, another thing, Ian, that I've noticed is when I get new clients into the private training sessions, especially females for some reason, girls, because I do have a girl group as well. Girls hate the activation, the practice activation that has passing sequences and passing patterns inside of it. Girls don't like to pass the ball. So I don't know why that is. They don't see the importance of passing the ball, or I don't get that. The passing sequences and passing patterns to them are, you know, totally bogus. So it usually takes me some time to put some emphasis on that. Like, why is it that I feel that you guys are really slacking off during these passing patterns? You guys are really just going through the motions. But I have yet to see any, you know, especially in my private training session in the girls, like, I have yet to see any of them that can consistently pass the ball straight flat on the ground. Like, if we haven't mastered that technique, then it needs to be important to you. And even if you have mastered it, it needs to be important to you. Why do you think that even at the professional level, you can see Liverpool or Atletico, you can watch one of their training sessions today on YouTube, and even in their training session, guess what they're doing? They're doing passing patterns to activate the body.
Yep.
Why are they doing passing patterns? Because the emphasis on the passing the ball never stops. Even at the professional level, they're going to spend, you know, on average, probably 3 hours a week just passing the ball. So it's the emphasis on a quality pass. It's crucial. It's crucial to being able to play the game at a high level, right?
Right.
For themselves, for the individual player, and for the team. For the team as a whole, it's important that every individual player on that team can pass the ball well. It's critical. So, but yeah, I feel like it's one of those things that definitely gets overlooked and skipped over because there may be a lot of athletic ability or talent within the player, but it just gets overlooked. So,
but that's the American model. Bigger, stronger, faster is better. Forget technical stuff
right.
in it.
Right.
That is what you hear in all the social media groups. It's like, yeah, these teams are dominating. It's like, but are they playing soccer? And that's how I look at this. It's my wife and I sit here and talk very heavily. It's like when we watch my daughter's team play, they play their formation. When they, especially 4v4, when they're outside playing 4v4, it's fun to watch because they understand if they play the diamond shape, and if they understand if whoever is in the back runs the ball up, if they ran up the right side, the person on the right needs to drop back now unless they moved up, and the person on the left will have to drop back. Like, they truly understand that.
The and space, right?
Yeah, they understand space, and they're six. And then I go watch my son's team, who is their 10 and 11-year-olds now, or going to be 10 and 11-year-olds, and it is hilarious because they bunch and it's nothing against them. It's whatever formation they're playing. They aren't used to it. They aren't used to learning to trust each other. And I mean, their team, his coach told us the other day, it was this team had two players starting in June and now they have a roster of 14 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time to build that trust. It takes time for them to understand things. And I think kids, going back to your passing thing, they spend so much time on it because that first touch from the pass, not even the pass then, it's also
for sure.
First touch. It's so critical.
Yep.
I find it comical. Like, we watched my daughters play this week, and I'm like, there's kids on my son's team that still turn and square to the ball to receive it
Right.
when they all they had to do is take a half step and be 50-50, like right shoulder to left shoulder to the goal, to the
Right, yeah.
goals,
Receiving
and
on their back foot, yeah.
receiving on their back foot and going forward, or letting it go beyond them and taking the ball. Like, they have to have that confidence to do that. And I kind of find it comical because that first touch from that pass, and like you said, passing is so important. If they can learn to just trust themselves, taking that correct first touch off those passes
Right.
is so critical, just as much as that
Oh
pass.
yeah.
But if you aren't getting the
Yes.
pass in the right spot, the first touch won't matter
Right.
anyways.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. Yeah, it's not gonna happen. So if a player is opened up and his hips are open to receive on his back foot, but the pass is not where the player wants it, it doesn't matter. None of it matters.
Right.
So that's why there's so much emphasis on the pass. But the pass is the passing technique with both feet is critical to every aspect of the game, because passing also transitions over to finishing.
Yes, you don't always
So
have
if you're a
to.
good passer, you're probably going to be a good finisher.
Yes.
So and when I spot and Ian, it's important that when we talk about passing, there's all types of passing. There's not just one technique to passing. There's
No.
passing inside the foot, there's passing with the laces, and then there's also passing aerially, right?
Right.
There's the chip, there's the long switch that we see, and then there's various passing techniques. So the question becomes, can the kid perform all of them, not just
Right.
one? So absolutely, during the activation phase in a training session, are you covering all the passing techniques, or are you just covering one? Because we could sit here and walk passing with the outside of the foot. I mean, there's various passing techniques. I cover passing with the chest, passing with other parts of the body. So passing with the chest, passing with the head. You really have to cover all facets. And of course, the head is not until they get into older age groups, but they need to understand how to play and pass the ball with every part of their body, not necessarily just their feet.
Yes.
So some of that goes back to creativity, right? Is the player creative enough? But in Europe, they teach those things. They're teaching them how to pass with the outside of the foot. They're teaching them how to heel pass. They're teaching them how to pass with their chest when that ball's in the air. They're teaching how to receive with the chest and then pass with the head, which is a difficult skill, and most players won't here in the States, most players won't do that. They're not going to receive with their chest and then pass it with their head. You're not going to see that very often. But we cover those things in the training session because, as you know, it's very difficult to, in a game scenario, it's very difficult to do anything perfect. So you have to try to cover uncomfortable situations for them as well. Can you pass the ball well in an uncomfortable situation? So the difference between you passing that ball well and not passing that ball well may be the difference between us winning 1-0 in a difficult match.
Right.
So the emphasis on that, like I said, and going back, a good passer is probably going to be a good finisher. So when that player is presented with the opportunity to finish, if he's a good passer, he's probably got a higher percentage chance of putting that ball in the back of the net because he's comfortable with this technique and he's covered all the bases. So he can pass with his laces, he can pass with the inside of his foot, he can pass with the outside of his foot, he can pass with the three toes on the outside, which we in Spanish we call it tres dedos. He can pass it with his head. So whatever scenario he's put in, when he gets in that box, he's going to be comfortable using that technique to put that ball in the back of the net.
Right.
Yeah, I mean it just it kind of trickles over into everything else.
So we talked about finishing there for a little bit. And do you go through finishing drills? Do you go through, how do I describe it? Different type of scenarios within the box, or do you Do you work on PKs with these players? Or do you, like you said, like passing such a critical thing? Like if you can pass the ball well, they normally can finish just as well as they can pass because they have, like you said, the confidence and the accuracy in themselves to do it. Do you go through finishing drills and do you go through?
Yeah, so the only absolutely we have to cover finishing. There is a difference between finishing and passing. And the biggest difference between finishing and passing is pressure. So typically, when as you move up the pitch as a player, so if you're a center back, you're always going to be, you're always going to have more time and space in theory, unless the team is in a full press, but that's in the story. The midfielders are going to have, typically, they'll have more pressure. And then the strikers are always going to have the most pressure. So the number nine, the seven, the 11, the wingers, they're always going to have the most pressure. So as they're moving up the pitch, the pressure changes. So with that said, you have to put the players in a training scenario under high levels of stress or high levels of pressure so that they can be comfortable finishing in that scenario. So uncontested finishing drills are very important, but contested finishing drills are probably even more important because I've never seen a number nine, unless it's a breakaway, right? And it's a long pass forward, but even there's pressure. But it's very difficult to be a winger or a number nine, a center striker, and be totally pressure free and finish. There's almost always going to be a high level of pressure on that player. So pressure is going to be a big facet of proper finishing drills, in my opinion. There is finishing technique that you can do uncontested, but that's kind of where small group training sessions are more beneficial than private training. Private training could be about technique, it can be about individual skill, it can be about skill moves. But if you're in a small group training, you're able to simulate those high pressure scenarios by adding a defender or two. And then trying to create those finishing scenarios that way. So yeah, pressures to me is the reason, the biggest difference between passing drills and finishing drills is the keeper's also going to put you under pressure. So is the keeper coming out and putting you under pressure? That's going to be a scenario that you're only going to see once you get into the box. Where when you're passing, yes, you'll have pressure when you're passing as well. But once you get in that box, everything time is more limited in that box. So yeah, that for sure we do finishing drills. I work on area that our aerial game a lot. So I do work on headers and stuff a lot. A lot of the players and clients that I get have never been coached or have never been taught how to use their heads. A lot of them are very low level players when it comes to using their heads. They could be the best player on the ground. They could be the best defender in North Texas, but they can't use their head or they're scared. And these kids are already U15, U16. So I have to put an emphasis on that because that portion of the game may take them to the next level. Even though it's something they're not comfortable with and don't enjoy, well, the game isn't necessarily about that. It's about are you proficient with all aspects of the game? It's not about, well, what do you like to do? So the aerial game is typically a place where you'll find players are weak. Most players, I've coached some very, very good players, but they weren't that strong in the air. And no matter how anybody likes it, even if you're a possession football team, you still need to be able to play in the air. So it's just one of those things that I think a lot of coaches don't touch on. I've heard of kids getting scouted and recruited simply on the fact that they can score on corners. Like, I get it. I get it. It's important. A lot of kids can't do it, but there are kids that have that niche of scoring on corners. I've been blessed to have a few on my team. I have a handful or more. If they get to the ball first on the corner, there's a good chance that they're going to put it in the net. So all that has been things that we've worked on in the past when they were young, and now they're older, and now they're comfortable doing it. But yeah, the aerial game is important too, no matter what anybody says, the aerial game is important.
Now, defense. I feel like every coach, even private coaches, if they were a midfielder in their career, they tend to be kind of both sides of the equation. If they're more of a striker or a winger, they tend to be more offensive.
Hey, I know that everyone it will hate me for just chopping it off. We're getting deep into conversation, and I know that this is something that we kind of get off tangent with, but we talk very deeply about what he's doing and gives you a good idea what his philosophy is. So catch him next episode.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.